From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the Nephilim cover-up, the Watcher series. Here's what's happening. Officials have recalled thousands of video baby monitors sold in the United States and Canada over what they say is possible burning hazards. The recall affects 26,000 Lorex Care and Share monitors that come with a blue lithium polymer battery that officials say can overheat, swell up, creating a burning hazard. According to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the monitors were sold at Babes R Us, B&H, Best Buy, Target, The Home Depot, Walmart, Amazon, and LorexTechnology.com. Just want you to be aware of that. In Concord, New Hampshire, state officials there are warning about an E. coli outbreak after a dozen people got sick from eating ground beef. Officials don't know yet where the contamination came from, but they're now cautioning people to make sure their ground beef is cooked. State health leaders say the outbreak doesn't pose a risk to people as long as they're making sure their food is properly prepared. In Philadelphia, Democrats tried to turn their attention Monday night from an email scandal that claimed their party chairwoman already and sent Bernie Sanders supporters into near rebellion with a scorching attack on Donald Trump that ranged from unnamed references by Michelle Obama to in-your-face attacks by Elizabeth Warren and Sanders himself. But what a day it was. Let's check in with our correspondent, Joe Gomez, in Philadelphia. What a rough start for the Democrats, Joseph.
Yeah, good morning, George. It certainly was a rough start for the Democrats, and it was a day full of high drama with Bernie Sanders supporters taking to the streets of Philadelphia, blocking off main streets, shutting down subway stops, and railing against the Hillary Clinton campaign and also the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders capped off the evening, which contained a long list of speakers, and he called for unity among the Democrats. I've never heard so many people cheering and jeering at the same time. Democrats took to their feet, cheered for Bernie Sanders as he spoke for close to half an hour tonight, and I think many believe that he did it. He was able to finally get some sort of unity here.
Hillary had to have been up in her room shaking her head going, this can't be happening.
Well, actually, you know, the camera did pan to President Bill Clinton, who was in the audience, and he was shaking his head, George. So was Donna Brazile, the interim DNC chairwoman. They couldn't believe what they were seeing, but it seems as though this revolution that Bernie Sanders started is having a hard time stopping on its own.
Joe, we'll talk to you tomorrow night. Joe Gomez, the Coast to Coast AM national correspondent. He was in Cleveland watching the RNC, and now he's doing the same thing with the Democrats. Dr. John Curtis, of course, onlinecolumnist.com. Well, this has got to be an interesting one for you, Mr. Curtis. What did you think about tonight?
Well, I think, you know, when you given that the DNC chairman just resigned for cheating Bernie out of the nomination, nothing is mentioned, of course, by anyone about that. It's all just a big love fest. And at the same time, you have Michelle Obama, and I'll give her some credit for delivering a very competent speech. But what she said is the moral high ground, they don't go to the low ground at all, the Democrats, followed by Elizabeth Warren's speech that utterly trashed Donald Trump far more than anyone at the RNC trashed Hillary Clinton. Believe me. If you listen to Elizabeth Warren, and this has been going on for weeks because Trump called her out on misrepresenting her ethnic background to get a job at Harvard University, saying that she was a Cherokee Indian. She has no proof of that, and she's been denounced by the Cherokee Nation having no record of her. But I think when you look at the, you know, Cory Booker speech, for instance, I mean, if you, George, anybody listening to that could tell that there was far more plagiarism in that speech of Obama's 2004 speech than anything that, you know, Melania Trump did in the RNC convention. So I think, you know, yes, this thing got off to a big start, but the undercurrent of cheating their way, Hillary not being named as, or, you know, giving the marching orders to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, in order to essentially trash Bernie Sanders in, you know, with the DNC press. That was never mentioned.
Track John Curtis, of course, onlinecolumnist.com, and John will talk with you tomorrow. And, of course, Howard Bloom, founding board member of the Epic of Evolution Society. He's been with us during all these primaries as well. Howard, your take on tonight at the Democratic Convention?
Well, John and I couldn't have more opposite points of view.
Fire away.
It started as a day of disaster. The Debbie Wasserman Schultz, because of the leak on WikiLeaks of these 20,000 emails, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was booed so loudly at a morning meeting that you couldn't hear her, and she had to stay invisible all day long. Plus, the CNN ORC poll had Trump 3 points ahead, and if you added Gary Johnson and the Green Party's Jill Stein, they had Trump 5 points ahead. Everything was set for disaster, and as your correspondents have said, people were in the streets marching for Bernie, but they pulled it off. They pulled it together, and they pulled it together in astonishing ways. On the Republican side of things, it turns out that Paul Manafort has ties to the Russians, that he has worked for Russian-backed Ukrainian leader Yanukovych, and Chris Stevens' mother came out with a statement over the weekend on Saturday saying, "I am writing to object to any mention of my son's name and death in Benghazi, Libya, by Donald Trump's campaign and the Republican Party." So those must have helped. But the use of humor to bridge the gap between the Bernie Sanders people and the Hillary Clinton people, and the use of gut honesty, I mean, a woman coming on stage in a wheelchair who has severe speech disabilities, giving a lengthy speech about how she's known Hillary Clinton for 23 years, and Hillary Clinton has helped her become a college graduate and a career woman. That was astonishing. The wife of a veteran who went to a free Trump University session, a supposedly free session, and was signed up for a $35,000 course. That's all the money she got from the government for her husband's death, and she has kids. And then couldn't get her mentor on the phone. The money was wasted. It was all a con. Linda Sanchez and her sister, the children of the very Mexican immigrants who Donald Trump says are rapists and murderers. But Linda Sanchez and her sister went to college. They were among 7 kids their parents sent through college. And the two of them, both of them, are congresswomen. It was astonishing. Then Al Franken and comedian Sarah Silverman, they did a comedy routine that pulled the two factions, the Hillary faction and the Bernie faction, together. And then they introduced Paul Simon, who sang Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Donald Trump promised us stars like we had never seen. The Democratic Party was out delivering him on stars. Michelle Obama's speech was brilliant. Cory Booker's speech was brilliant. I have no idea about plagiarism, but it was brilliant. And then Bernie Sanders, with all his heart and soul, said, "We must work for Hillary Clinton. We must defeat Donald Trump." So the night turned out to be a triumph. In fact, within an hour of the beginning of the convention, the turmoil between Bernie and Hillary was beginning to come to an end, and they pulled it off.
Let's watch what happens in the days to come. Howard, thank you so much. Howard Bloom. And the world continues in chaos. At least 19 people killed, 20 injured when a knife-wielding man went on a rampage at a facility for the disabled in a Japanese city. The fire department said a doctor or doctor at the scene confirmed the deaths. The man has turned himself into police. 2 people were killed, as many as 20 wounded when gunfire erupted at a teen swimsuit party at a Southwest Florida nightclub early Monday. A 14 and 18-year-olds were killed. 3 people have been detained for questioning, but they don't know if they were involved in the shootings. And how the mighty have fallen. At one point, Yahoo was worth $15 billion. And now Verizon is going to buy Yahoo for about $5 billion in cash. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, the expert on the Internet. Wow, did they plummet, huh?
Yeah, I remember when you Yahooed, right?
Yeah.
That was
Yahoo.
Exactly. It's really a very sad story, and I know some great people at Yahoo too, and I'm kind of worried about what's going to happen to them. they weren't only worth $15 billion. In 2008, Microsoft offered $45 billion, $2008, and it was turned down.
Take the money and run, right? Yeah.
Well, remember, it's easy to forget now that Yahoo is 21 years old. So that makes it older than Google. It was really the first of the directories, because there were human beings who were searching around the web. I remember when one of my websites, when the Privacy Forum originally showed up in Yahoo's directory, and I went, wow, that's so neat, because someone had to see it and put it in there. There really were no search engines yet. And there just were a bunch of poor decisions made, and this is where it ends up, sucked into, assimilated, we might say, into Verizon. Now it becomes part of their other properties.
Like, yeah, and they want AOL. Digital. Yeah, they want this.
So it's AOL and Yahoo. Now Yahoo isn't a small operation. It has a billion monthly users. It's the second largest email system after Gmail. But a lot of people are obviously worried. People are worried what's going to happen. You know, their addresses aren't going to change tomorrow. But over time, Verizon is going to want to integrate things. And there's no telling what's going to happen to things like Tumblr, which has a lot of blogs across a whole range of topics. And just overall, it's very sad because at one time, Yahoo was flying very, very high, and it just wasn't able to keep up with the changes that we've seen in the Internet. And I fear that, you know, some years, you know, not very many years from now, it will really just be a brand name and have been completely consumed by Verizon. And there'll probably be some things they still brand as Yahoo. But as we know it, the company is already going to be gone.
Thanks, Lauren. Those companies should have come up with Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram. They should have been doing all that, and they didn't. They simply sat back and rested on their laurels. Look what happened. An American surfer in serious but stable condition after he was attacked by a large crocodile at a popular tourist beach in Costa Rica. According to an emergency responder, credited the man's friend for fighting off the alligator with his bare hands. A woman was mauled to death and another seriously injured when they were attacked by Siberian tigers at a wildlife park in Beijing there. Dr. Tim LaHaye, who partnered with Christian writer Jerry Jenkins to create the Left Behind series, whose 80 million books possibly had a greater impact on modern Christianity than anything other than the Bible, has died. He suffered a stroke. He was 90 years old. Disaster still here in California. About 20,000 residents remained out of their homes tonight. That will probably go up as a 51-square-mile sand fire continued to burn in Southern California's Santa Clarita Valley. The fire has burned about 30,000 acres. It's taking about 10,000 acres a day since it began on Friday. Firefighters are calling it almost unprecedented as it continues to burn. And it's time for a little intention experiment. There is no rain in the forecast at all, but we need some help. I've been getting lots of emails from folks, and also psychic Suleiman Edmondson has told us, you need to do this, and you need to do this now. So we are. I want you to concentrate on Southern California and just make it rain. And just make it rain. I'm not going to tell you when to stop it yet. We need something, and we need it fast, because this place is burning up like crazy. So give it a try. And then let's see what happens. Again, there's no rain in the forecast as of right now. And lots of rumors on the Internet about the Yellowstone National Park, that it's being evacuated, that people have to expect the big explosion there from the caldera. What's happening there? We're going to check in with Stan Deo about this and also his search for Atlantis next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Now, there are rumors all over the Internet that Yellowstone National Park has been evacuated as fear of the caldera erupting. It's a super volcano. It erupts every 640,000 years on estimate, and they say it's way overdue. But on checking, it really hasn't been evacuated. There have been some areas that have been cordoned off, or they've told people, don't go here, don't go there. Stan Deo, of course, is with us to talk about his discovery of Atlantis. But for a couple minutes here, we're going to talk with Stan, who has worked as an undercover agent for the FBI as well as holding a top secret security clearance. And he took part in an exclusive black project which specialized in flying saucer technology. He has been on Coast to Coast, Stan, 20 times, I think.
Gosh, I don't know. It's been a lot of times over the last 20 years.
Sure has. Anyways, what are you hearing about Yellowstone?
Well, it's not what I'm hearing. It's what I'm seeing in the data recorders over there. Now, I'm aware of the Snopes article that said that the evacuation was false and all that stuff, and I thank you for sending me that email. Mm-hmm. But what has been happening over the last, 16, 17 days, is that nearly half of the seismographs or the helicopters there at Yellowstone have been recording low-level quakes, some of them looking like what's called harmonic tremors, which is when magma's moving up a chute, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to start a panic or anything, but all I can tell you is if you go to the isthisthingon.org, which is the Yellowstone seismograph map, so you can see it real time, you'll see that about 12 of the 29 seismic recorders there are showing activity over the last, the last 11 hours. I've not really seen this kind of activity sustained over a period of time there at Yellowstone, so I am kind of interested to watch this, and it might be why they're evacuating. I mean, even Old Faithful has blown its top kind of excessively here recently. Madison River's seismic thing looks like, you know, an explosion all over the seismic recorder. They're all low level.
So you're not going to scoff these reports off, are you?
No.
Oh, boy.
I'm afraid not. Look, all you do is go look at those recorders. As I say, they're live. And look at the lines. They go down, you know, by every 30 minutes. And you'll see periodic rises, you know, like a tremor. You know, it'll expand up high and then go down low. But you'll see them at a regular interval, which is normally associated with magma trying to move up a tube and sticking on the walls and catching and hanging, and you'll see this like dung, dung, dung. That's why they call it harmonic tremors. So, gosh, you know, I don't know whether it's accurate the whole thing. You know, that Snopes thing can be trusted most of the time, but sometimes they get the story wrong or do it wrong on purpose, so it might be to quiet fears. But just go look at the data yourself and see what I'm talking about. It's there.
Stan, geologists are saying that an explosion caused by the volcano there could very well throw the United States into a 200-year-long volcanic winter with ash blotting out the sun and destroying the entire ecosystem.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Not only this one, Yellowstone, we were worried about. We were worried about one down in the North Island of New Zealand. The Taupo, Lake Taupo Caldera is starting to show action, and north of there on the shoreline of North Island, at White Island, underneath they found a new magma pocket, and it's as big as Yellowstone, if not bigger. And so both of these areas are being watched closely. If you'll, I think there's a link on our show page here with you guys to a page full of images that people can reference while we're doing the show and after. And if you look at image number 56 down about the very bottom, it's a pattern of ash falls that Holly's recorded in her new book. And it shows Yellowstone, the Mesa Falls ash bed, the Huckleberry Ridge, all in shade. So you can see the areas that were affected last time, or last several times, by the Yellowstone eruption and also by Mount St. Helens and the Long Valley Caldera eruption, all this. And so if you live in that zone, that might be of interest to you, especially what we're seeing in Yellowstone.
Just what we need, of course. Let me give out the name of Holly's new book. I want to talk a little bit more with you about it tonight, Stan.
Okay.
But
right.
It's called Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed. Ironically, L.A. Marzulli, who's coming up after you tonight, loves this book of hers.
Yeah, I saw that. I was amazed because he was over at Holly's table there at the conference we were at together about 10 days ago.
Small world.
And I came up, and he was thumbing through that and talking with her, and he was really impressed with all the stuff she put in there. I mean, when you've got 1,600 endnotes in a book documenting it, you know it's going to be big and beefy. It's not a light read.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment with Stan Deo as we talk about his quest to find Atlantis. Simply an amazing series of works by Stan Dale. His website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And if you have some time, Lex has posted a number of graphics that Stan has provided us. Take a look at those, or if you can, follow along with us. Now, if you're in your car, you're not going to be able to do that. But if you're at home and your computer's near your radio, or you're listening right off your computer, take a look at the graphics. We're going to come back in a moment with Stan Dale on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to ferry across the Mersey in Asheville, North Carolina, in about a month from now, August 27th, for our incredible live stage show event. Full information available for you by going to coasttocoastam.com. Look at the highlight pictures. You'll see a series of pictures right in the middle of the homepage. Click the one that looks like Asheville, North Carolina's event, and it'll take you to the ticket center at the Diana Wortham Theater and pick out your seats and come on by. Welcome back. Stan Dale with us. Stan, tell us about your work on Atlantis and how did you get involved in that?
George, I tell you what, this has got to be the discovery, the archaeological discovery of the century and last century. Everyone's been looking for Atlantis, and I wasn't really going to reopen my investigation I did for the Vindicator Scrolls back in 89, but I was trying to find an asteroid impact bigger than the one that hit in the Yucatan Peninsula called the Chicxulub meteor, because I knew that at the time I was doing the discovery of the Garden of Eden in 2014, that a big meteor had to have hit the Earth to tilt its axis and put a shockwave through and separate India from Africa and shove it up in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. So I figured that was the one that did it, but I was going to check my figures and see if I could find another officially recorded big asteroid impact over near India. And there wasn't one, but I started looking at the geology underneath the plate of India, and the bathymetry, you know, the sea bottom between there and Africa. And over a period of several days earlier this year, I found the largest asteroid impact in recorded history. They haven't officially recognized it yet, but I've been already discussing it with physicists in Australia at the Australian National University and in India with the people that are doing research there. They suspected that they had part of this crater, which was 250 miles in diameter.
Jeez.
On the east coast of India, in the Kudapa Basin, they call it. They couldn't find the impact. Well, it's because it was hidden, and I did find it. And, on that images page there, the best one to look at is probably images 4 and 5, which show you the east coast of India, where the Kudapa Basin is, and where this 250-mile diameter crater left part of its western rim into the coastline of India. But it was covered up because it shoved India, the surface of India, up over the ocean bed, up toward the Himalayas when it hit. And when it finished moving, India's southern part, where Sri Lanka is attached underneath the sea,
yeah,
it went over the impact crater, the main crater, and filled it in with debris falling in from the coastlines. You'll see it.
Jeez.
In image number 5. So I went to the Scripps Institute again, and I had them give me some data to look at it to see the actual diameter of the asteroid. It made a crater 250 miles wide, but it was only about 15 miles only in diameter. And the image number 4 shows what I got from the Scripps Institute data. And right in the center of that little white circle that's in there, you can look at this later, people, there's a little elliptical thing, like a very slim egg-looking hole, which told me that this asteroid didn't hit smack straight on and leave a circular crater. It hit at an angle of about 35 degrees, which we could determine from that data there. Anyway, it hit at a shallow angle and started shoving not only India up into the Himalayas, it shoved Australia and Indonesia.
Jeez.
And New Guinea, all of that over to the east and up to where they are today.
When did this happen, Stan?
Well, now, this is an interesting question. According to my revised timeline, because of the data that I've gathered on the speed of light decreasing with a speed of 10 to the 60th power, 10 to the 60 zeros behind it, slower now than it was at the Big Bang. When you apply this curve to the radiometric dating of the universe and, the Earth and the Sun and all that, this occurred not 100 million years ago, which classical physics would tell you. It occurred at around 2200 to 2300 BC. Now, this was recent.
This is very recent.
And it means that continental drift, plate tectonic drift, is nonsense. We're talking about catastrophic impact that just blew the heck out of all the continents that are hooked together in Pangaea. And not only that, I found four others that they haven't discovered yet either. And that's in image number seven, or animation. Anyway, if you look at image number eight, it shows in black where India and Indonesia and Australia and New Guinea were when the impact occurred, and then you see in the normal green map where they are today, and there's a couple of arrows that show the direction that that Kutupa asteroid took initially and how it shoved seabed and mantle ahead of it over into toward New Guinea where it is today, and you'll see something called the Banda Sea, and that's where that asteroid either stopped or left the planet. I mean, it was a shallow impact, and I thought maybe it just exited there. It took a chunk through the Earth and then exited, or it's buried underneath the whole Banda Sea, and you can see that in image six.
And it looks like it moved the entire continent of Australia.
Oh, it did. It did. And this is cool because in that part of Australia there that's on the top part of that black image you're looking at of Australia, where it was, that's called Marble Bar. And the Australian National University scientist or physicist was drilling cores down in there. And earlier this year, about 2 months ago, he released a paper saying, look, I haven't found the asteroid yet, but something left a lot of those little glass round spherules all through these layers that I dug through here at Marble Bar, and it was big. I think it was about 12 to 15 miles in diameter. So I wrote him straight away, and I said, look, I found your asteroid you're looking for, because it would have thrown all this stuff over on you when it hit near India. And he thought for a while, and he wrote back, and he said, no, I think they're in two different time layers in the sediment. I don't think they're connected, but believe me, they are. And when I talked about this on the Hagman show here just after the conference, you know, that was 10 days ago, and a geologist over in Mongolia emails me and says, turn on your Skype, I got to talk to you. I'm a petroleum research geologist. I've worked in the industry for, you know, 20, 30 years. And I'm a Californian, but I'm over here working for the oil companies, and I'm in Mongolia at the moment. And I heard you say that something, a big meteor hit off the coast of India, and I want to tell you, it's what I've been looking for. We've all been trying to explain what happened to Saudi Arabia, to, you know, to Oman and the empty quarter down there in Yemen. They were coated with over 9,800 feet, nearly 10,000 feet of sea bottom and parts of the mantle, and it was backwashed from where this meteor hit. And he said, I am so excited, I'm going to send you some of our data, he says, and some pictures. So I've put them on to the this show images page, images 28, 29, 30, and I tell you in these things, you click the big image, who the guy is and what it means. But it just, I'm so excited I can hardly talk. It's really, I failed.
Well, now tie this together.
Okay.
How can this be Atlantis, or what? Well, where are we headed here?
Okay, I studied when I looked at that and I realized that this big event happened there. I thought, Plato said that Atlantis was destroyed, by the gods or super god, whatever, by earthquakes and flooding and breaking up, and it was drowned. Well, most people, when you say Atlantis, they think of this, you know, little small island where Poseidon and his wife Cleito the human lived and had babies. They don't think about the mainland of Atlantis. The mainland was over 1.3 million square miles. It was a big island, if you want to call it an island. And I thought, could this be in the area somewhere? You know, an impact like this would do several things. It would blow steam up into the atmosphere, you know, just vaporize huge chunks of the sea. And then that would condense as rain, and rain for days and days and days. It would send tsunamis around the planet, all over the place, several times around the planet.
Sure.
It would break up the mantle and let the hot water pockets in the Moho discontinuity come gushing up as fountains of hot water. And when I was realizing this, I thought, holy cow, I'm talking the Genesis flood. The same thing happened.
Noah.
Could the same thing have happened? And then I realized where Atlantis was. I had to prove it, but I did. And it's all of the Saudi, all of the Arabian Peninsula. And the island, it was an island. Even the old-timers, the Bedouins in Saudi Arabia say, yes, when the men of the olden times were here, this was an island. And the island is now connected to Europe because the plate tectonic movement has, you know, from the impact, has shoved it up into India, or sorry, Europe. But if you go up the Persian Gulf, up the valley where the Euphrates and the Tigris are, and go up into the border where Syria and Turkey join in the Mediterranean, all that was water. And if you look at image number 11, I've got it there so you don't have to imagine it. You can just click on that big image and you can see that the Persian Gulf was originally the Atlantic, the real Atlantic Ocean.
So what you're saying is Atlantis didn't sink, it went up.
Well, the
are you?
No, the southern part of it, well, toward the Arabian Sea, I guess, would be the best way to say it. That part was driven down by the meteor impact offshore there that moved India. But that meant that the northern part was raised up. But yet, with all of the tsunamis and the flooding and back and forth, portions of it, major portions of it, from Oman all the way up to the Jordan River there, were swamped with water and sand and stuff and dead bodies. And Plato's account said that you couldn't pass through that area to where the capital of Atlantis was for, you know, a long time because it was impassable. It was full of mud instead of water.
Would that stand explain some of the erosion on the Sphinx?
Yes, yes.
Water erosion.
Oh, absolutely, George, absolutely right. Because Plato got his data from overhearing a story from Solon, who was, you know, his great-grandfather type age. And Solon was over in a portion of Egypt today in the lowlands called Sais, S-A-I-S. And he was talking with the priest of Sais, and they had a stela there that they were reading from, telling what happened to Atlantis. And they would have been drowned over there by the flood as well, except they said the Nile saved them by carrying off a lot of the flood surge and whatever, and they were up on higher ground. This means, of course, what I'm saying, I know is going to get me in trouble with Bible scholars, but I think from reading the Hebrew that the flood certainly wiped out all life on that Arabian Peninsula in Atlantis and a lot of life all over the planet, but there were sporadic survivors. And proof of this is that the giants were in Israel long time after the flood was over. God sent, when the Exodus occurred, God sent Joshua in there to kill off whole cities full of giants and their wives, their children, their animals. Everything was killed because they were bad gene pool from the days of Atlantis. So they did survive the flood, and there's records of it surviving the flood over in South America and Central America and in Europe and various other places. There were sporadic pockets where giants appeared, and Marzulli will tell you more about that, I'm sure, later tonight. The Atlanteans were hybrid humans from the Super Ben, you know, the little G gods that came to Earth and bred with our women. Not only Atlantis, but they landed over in South America, North America. That's why we're finding evidence of these things.
Yeah,
all over
everywhere.
Even in England.
And high technology they had?
The central little G supermen gods, yes, they had it. They had the technology to drill cores down and to get hot water and fresh water from the Mam Dome on the east coast of Saudi Arabia. At the time, it was Atlantis, of course. But they probably had the technology to fly around themselves. But the hybrid children of all that used bows and arrows and swords and normal ships, you know, trimarines and things like that, because they didn't have the same intellect or knowledge of the other technology, and they were only given enough for metallurgy and various other things to allow the culture to generate the infrastructure we have today. And that was a no-no, according to the God of Gods, you know, the one that's spoken in the Bible. He did not want interference into what he generated in the Garden of Eden in Tanzania, but when they sinned in the Garden of Eden there in Ngurru Crater, he took Adam and Eve out, and their children and them migrated down into Yemen across Gulf of Eden, and into the Saudi Peninsula. And that's where they met the fallen ones, the Poseidons and his ilk all over the planet, but that's where they met Poseidon in the continent, the island of Atlantis, and the crossbred. And the only ones that were found that were not crossbred and DNA corrupted when the flood occurred, when the meteor caused the flood and the breakup of the surface there, the only ones were Noah and his sons and their wives. That's why the story is told that way, is because they were Atlantean citizens, but they were purebred. They were not crossbred with the off-worlders.
But how did Noah know how to build the ark? Did he truly get a message from God to do this?
Look, he even walked with God. He personally saw and talked with God. And that's an interesting point that you bring up there, because Adam did that. Eve did that. They walked with him in the cool of the day in the garden. Noah walked and talked with him and got instructions on how to build this and where to get the materials and how to coat it with tar and all that kind of stuff, pitch tar from trees. Anyway, when you get to the time of Moses, though, when God is there on the mountain, Mount Sinai, which is certainly in a different place than people tell you today anyway, but when he's there, Moses says, look, I've been talking to you in this burning bush that's nearby and everything, and can I see what you look like? You know, I hate just talking to a voice in the air. So God says to him, Moses, if I were to stand in front of you or appear in front of you, my presence, my very presence would destroy your body, kill you. So what I'm going to do is I want you to hide in this cleft in Mount Sinai here in the mountain. It's a sharp cleft. It will shield you, and I'm going to make a cloud appear over that, and I'm going to project my image onto that cloud, and that won't hurt you. You can see my image. And that's what he did, because he could not be close to Moses at that time without hurting him.
Why? Okay. Why? Was he a radiation, or what was he?
The energy density of God's universe, which is parallel to our universe, was the disparity was getting greater and greater. And this is a clue to what's going to happen to us, because in the book of the Revelation of John, it says that our universe, our stars, our sun, will be consumed in a fire at the end of the millennial reign, and a new earth and a new heavens will replace it. What it means is our universe is going to be absorbed into God's universe. But at the moment, the disparity in the average energy on atoms in his universe, parallel to our universe, is so great that when they come through into our world from his level, messengers, angels, him, it's bright, it's hot. You know, even in the time of Ezekiel, we see references to that where flaming chariot comes down. You see, it all makes sense.
And tell me more about the area around Saudi Arabia, Oman, where you now call was formerly Atlantis. How much landmass was lost from what we see there today?
Well, let's see. At a guess, I would say probably about one seventh of the landmass, which was I've calculated 1.3 million square miles,
was lost.
It was a lot, and a lot of it's buried. I suspect that the Saudi, the Salman or the Saudi royal family, I suspect that they know that they were Atlantis, because they've got, well, first of all, there's a big development on the west coast, the south coast of the Persian Gulf. They're now calling it the Arab Gulf, and it's called the Atlantis Resort. Big news, big entertainment, whatever. Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia has now made a deal with Six Flags of Texas to make a Six Flags site there in Saudi Arabia as a tourist attraction.
Huh.
Now, you know, Holly said to me, yeah, I'd like to see a woman in a burqa and all that robe and stuff go down a water slide. That'd
yeah,
be
right.
Fun.
That would be something.
Anyway.
Get caught on something.
Well, caught or drowned or whatever. Anyway, but in addition to that, the Saudi royal family, Prince Salman in particular, is changing over their economy from depending on oil to depending on minerals, mineral processing, gold, silver, that kind of stuff, and also entertainment and, tourism.
Like now, Dubai.
Definitely. But if you go to the other coast over in the Red Sea, they've started a deal with the Sudan and in the area. They're in the Red Sea, two mining projects, mining for gold, silver, and other precious metals, including copper.
Sounds like the Anunnaki.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And there's more to that. Exactly is what you're saying. Because they've named the two drilling sites Atlantis 1 and Atlantis 2. Tell me they don't know what they're doing.
So how did they know? They must have known this a long time ago.
I suspect so.
And kept it a secret?
Well, they're certainly not broadcasting, and I'll tell you what. Getting images or photographs inside the empty court of the Rub al-Khali, or in in a number of places on the west side of the, let's see, is it the west side, southwest side of the country, of the Arabian Peninsula, especially in Saudi Arabia. They are not allowing photographs to be taken from orbit or to be published if they are taken. There are certain areas along the Jabal Tuwaik mountain range just to the southwest of Riyadh where Prince Salman, that's his government.
Hold on, Stan. We're already at the top of the hour, but we'll come back and take more, and we'll take calls as well. Stan Dale thinks he found Atlantis. We'll be back.